Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello, and welcome to Dwell, a Circe Institute podcast for homeschool moms by homeschool moms. My name is Karen Kern, and as always, I am joined by my friend and co-host, Renee Mathis. Hi, Renee.
Hey, Karen, that's good to see you. You've had a lot going on in your family since we recorded last week.
So much going on. Yes, daughter got married. Katerina is married and off on her honeymoon in Crete. And the family, all the extended family and friends have gone home. And it's a little bit quieter. Although I do have two grandchildren here in the house right now. But, you know, it's quieted down around here. So,
well, we're getting ready for the influx next weekend. My daughter and her husband and six children are coming to stay for Labor Day weekend. So I'm busy baking all the things.
Oh, what are you baking? What are you baking?
I realized I need to do double batches because the kids will eat a lot. I have some cinnamon rolls ahead of time that I can freeze and then bake like that morning. And one of the granddaughters is having a birthday. So we're going to have a birthday cake with sprinkles and sparklers. And
that's so fun. And
cookies and fun things to keep on hand. So yeah, I just want to get it all done ahead of time so I can spend time with them while they're here.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I did that with making desserts for the wedding, just filled up the freezer and then they were done.
Yeah, they call them out. That's great. Yeah.
So today we are going to talk about a new book by Sally Thomas. And Sally is a poet. This is her first novel. It's called Works of Mercy. And we're going to talk about this in relation to the idea of having a vocation or a calling. And we'll discover, maybe as we describe the book a little bit, how the main character, her name is Kirsty, an elderly lady. Well, I don't know. Is she all that elderly? Maybe she's not much older than you and I. Me anyway. But how she comes to embrace her community and find her vocation. And if you're not familiar with this, maybe I'll just read this paragraph on the back of the book so that the listeners can have an idea what we're talking about. So it says, Kirsty Sane, aging housekeeper for the newly arrived young priest, assumes that despite this personal change in her rural parish, her own solitary rounds will proceed as always. She will go to mass, clean the rectory, go home again. She will keep herself to herself in the highly hedged present and coexist in the past. When a hairless, eyeless kitten is thrust upon her, an unlikely deterrent to the mice invading her house, she declares, I am not going to love that thing. She has spent a lifetime armoring herself against the risks of affection. But between the hapless Father Schuler, who teeters on the edge of breakdown, and the crisis of the Malkins, a parish family whose cheerful chaos erupts in tragedy, Kirsty finds her own wounds broken open. Drawn against her will into the sufferings of these vulnerable lives, she returns to an old hero, the Elizabethan poet-priest Robert Southwell, whose Mary Magdalene's funeral tears provides a skeleton key to her own locked heart. In Southwell's words, love is the fire that renders all things new. So this book was just published recently, and it's published by Wise Blood Books in 2022. And my son David had the author Sally Thomas come to his bookstore and do a book signing. And so I got to meet her and she signed my book, and he's selling it now. So if you want to get a copy, Wise Blood Book publishes, and I know that Goldberry sells it. So that's a plug for my son's bookstore. Unashamedly.
Of course.
But so, well, let's just jump in.
Jump in. Yeah. And I wanted to assure our readers, you haven't, our readers, our listeners, you haven't missed anything. If you're wondering, wait, Karen and Renee, did we announce a summer book club? We did not. So we're doing it a little differently this time. We just picked a book to talk about between the two of us and kind of explore through this lens of vocation. So I'm glad I read the book. It was very compelling. I couldn't wait to get to the end. I wanted to see what happened. I cared about the characters. I will say it did not end. I do like endings that are neatly wrapped up and tied with a bow, and that is not the case in this book. So there are a lot of loose ends at the end, but I will say that our main character, Kirsty, does undergo a profound change, and that is very compelling to watch and to explore and to kind of journey along with her as she, you know, again, we meet her and she's this elderly woman who's a housekeeper for a priest, and she is the most buttoned up, locked up, tight character you could imagine. And you ask, how is she going to thaw out? Literally, she comes from a place in Scotland, Shetland, which is the far, far north of the island, and it is cold. I mean, so she's grown up in this cold, frozen place. They're closer to Norway than they are the rest of the UK. So there's a lot of Scandinavian influences in Shetland. And so she kind of has that fish out of water.
Right, because then the book is set in a town in North Carolina, fictional town in North Carolina here, you know, where it's the South, it's warm. It's everything that the Shetlands or, you know, Northern Britishers are not. And so she really out of water. And then through the book, there's flashbacks to her own childhood, her years in college, her years of a broken heart, and how she finds her husband. But you find that you learn that maybe the reason that she's like the way she is at the beginning is just because of the things she suffered.
Right.
In some cases at the hands of other people, right? Like her college professor, you know, you find out that he was lecherous. He was not a good man, and her heart was broken. And then she marries somebody who's, he's okay.
Yeah. He's kind of a mama's boy, I think. Yeah. And
he's a bit disappointing.
He's just like, blah, he is. And her mother-in-law that they live with is so disappointed that Kirsty can't have children. There will be no grandchildren, that she kind of writes her off, I think. And Kirsty's just kind of left to make her own way in a sense, because she doesn't fit in to this town. She goes to a different church than they do. They go to the Baptist church. She goes to the Catholic church.
And then at the very beginning, I think it's page 8, she says, she kind of describes herself here and says, well, she's explaining how she does work. She cleans the priest's house, and she does some work with a guild, different guilds in the church. But she says, the work suited me. I did feel I should serve in some way, although I attended mass with assiduity. For too many years, I hadn't held up my end. As Rance, that's her husband, would say, I hadn't been taking one for the team. The difficulty was that I preferred solitude to just about anything else. In fact, I had once said to Rance that I craved loneliness. Anyways, and then describes how their conversation about that. But it's so sad that here's this woman who is in her 60s, late 60s probably, and she craves just being alone. She wants to go and clean a house. She wants to go and do the work of cleaning a house, but she doesn't want to be a homemaker.
Mm-mm. Right.
Like, explains that she doesn't want to cook. You know, her mother-in-law, well, she lives in a house that had been her mother-in-law's, and she doesn't even get to, you know, until her husband dies, she doesn't even get to make it her own.
Right. So all of this is starting up with her very, very late in life. Like yeah. The idea that I think she says at one point in the beginning, you know, I'm going to leave the floors this way and I'm going to pull up the carpet because I like it that way. And I like the hardwood floors. Whereas before she never had the privilege of making her home her own. She, you know, you learn through these circumstances that she suffered, that everything that she probably wanted to be and thought she would be and do in her life has not happened for different reasons. And so she really is at the point of kind of deciding, what am I going to do with my life? You know, is she just going to keep living the way she has been and staying lonely and alone? Or is she going to open herself up to relationships with other people? And it's not something I don't think that she decides, you know, she doesn't wake up one morning and go, I'm going to be friendly now and I'm going to make friends. It just sort of happens. The circumstances that happen around her cause her to be sucked into the lives of other people before she knows it. And then all of a sudden,
right. she landed on her. Like, just finds herself like the first thing she finds herself with a ugly kitten that's hairless and blind. And she doesn't know what's wrong with his eyes. It looks like they've been eaten by something, bugs or something. Anyway, and the vet doesn't really want to put it down. So somehow or another, I don't remember how she gets the cat.
She gets it from the neighborhood handyman. And he is one person who has kind of reached out.
He is a good man. We were talking earlier about there are no good men in this, but you know,
I was thinking after I said that, because I don't think there are any good men, but I think everyone in this story is equally flawed. I think there's no good anybody. Everybody has their struggle. But this particular handyman, who's a very unlikely friend for Kirsty, when she has a problem with mice, he says, I've got the solution. I'll bring you a cat. And he brings her this blind, half dead, hairless thing that she first has to nurse back to health to even see if it will live. And then they kind of strike up this bit of a relationship that they learn how to coexist with one another. He's not a very good mouser at first, but she feeds him and lets him, you know, you can see her starting to gently and slowly be willing to coexist with another human, not a human, an animal. But I think it's therapeutic for her.
Yeah. Yeah. To be aware of another creature and to be caring for it and to see it come back to life.
Right. Because
she had never been able to have a child.
Right.
Yeah. Terrible circumstances.
But. And then as she does her work for the priest, he's kind of a mess. He's brand new, very young. You ask yourself, why did you choose this vocation? Because he seems so ill-suited to being a priest. He doesn't like people. He doesn't seem to want to do anything pastoral in his vocation as a priest.
Right. And then she actually has to kind of help him and encourage him. And like, it's like the blind leading the blind right there. Right. And how to love people.
Yeah.
But then, you know, then she meets this family with many children and she just is, she's absorbed into their world. And then I think that's where she really starts to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Here's this family that, you know, by all appearances is just a train wreck. The dad is Jewish. The mom is Catholic. There's a ton of kids, I don't know, 8, 10, half of them are named for saints and half of them have Hebrew names from the Old Testament. And they're just this conglomeration, but the mom, it turns out the mom is pregnant and on bed rest. And so Kirsty ends up bringing them soup. And, yeah. You know, the title of the book, Works of Mercy, right. You just see Kirsty doing these little works of mercy with all the people that God brings into her life. And this family is a huge one, because she not only has to, you know, I think she'd be okay with cooking the soup, but she has to put it in her car and drive it to their house. And then the mom wants to talk to her and have a conversation. And she's freaked out about this, but she does.
Yeah. She says, I'll just read a little bit. As the autumn wore on, I tended the kitten, kept my house clean, the rectory and went to church. There on Sundays, I saw Howard and the children. The sight of them tagged me with a niggling guilt, like a slow leak whose source I couldn't trace. I began cooking whole chickens more frequently. I made quantities of soup and then hunted down my mother-in-law's chicken and dumplings recipe, her best company meal. Though we so rarely entertained any company besides ourselves. On Sundays, I took the thermal containers from the fridge to hand off to Howard as he herded his children into the van after Mass. Before, I had cooked out of boredom, or more accurately, I had cooked meals for myself as an assertion that I existed. But as surely as Rancid existed and was as much worth feeding as he had been, I had not believed it, and I had not wanted to eat what I cooked. Now I felt driven by something outside myself, a demand on my time and attention. I resented it, rather. Still, I did it. So she's beginning to feel this call on herself. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't really love it at first.
No. You know,
she's doing it out of duty because there's nobody else to do it. But nevertheless, it's a call. And I think that's how it relates to what you and I were talking about earlier about vocation.
Right. So we were talking about, you know, the idea of work for the Christian and our work, you know, unlike in the earlier centuries where there was this sharp divide between the sacred and the secular, that your work was either something that you did in a Christian context, like a priest or a monk or a nun, and then everything else was secular. And it's like, it didn't matter. But thankfully, the idea of vocation has been enlarged to everything matters, and anything that God has called us to do matters. So our vocation can be a homeschool mom who's a teacher, or a mother of young children, or a woman who works part time from her home, or part time outside her home, or full time, whatever the Lord has called you to do. Our vocations are a lot bigger and a lot broader, even than the job that we might do to earn money. So we can think about our vocation as, what is my calling as a daughter? What is my calling as a wife? What is my calling as a sister? If you have sister, or okay, I have brothers. So yeah. What is my calling as a church member? And what is my calling as a member of my neighborhood or my town or my, the group I volunteer with? So all these little things that these roles that we play can be different vocations.
Right.
And I think in this book, seeing Kirsty kind of thaw out and realize that she can be a friend to this family. She can be an encouragement to this young priest. She can be a mother figure, if you want to call it, to this cat and help keep it alive and help make sure it doesn't die. And she's starting to, I think through all of that, she starts to face some of her own past griefs and hard things and heartbreak. And I don't know, would you say, Karen, that there's some healing that goes on, or some change?
So, because, in the book, she looks back on things, and she's telling the story of herself as a young woman. And I don't want to give too much of the book away, but she has these dreams of a baby drowning, and then there actually is a crisis in this family, a tragedy. And it's like she has compassion for that event because of what she'd experienced inwardly with her dreams of babies and not being able to have a baby, and actually at one point having had a baby die inside her. And so I think well, she says when she's a young woman and she's reading Robert Southwell, I think this is where she sees the quote, sorrow is the sister of mercy and a maker of compassion. And so she's developing, as she's taking on these works of mercy, she's also taking on a sense of compassion for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in all of that, she's being healed in herself too.
Right. And like we said, there's not a happy ending for everyone in the book. There's a lot of questions that are left unanswered, but I think at the end, when you know, Kirstie gets to hold that new baby that has arrived, it's you do sort of feel like a full circle.
Right. Yes. And that maybe she's going to be taking on a grandmotherly role. And that yes. She is the godmother, but she's also going to be taking on a grandmotherly role and have more of a stable influence on that family and a dear friendship with the oldest daughter, Lucy, who kind of mirrors herself as a young woman, but is different, opposite. Yeah. You know?
And also enjoyed the little, there's not a lot of interaction, but Howard's mother, who comes to stay with them. And she and Kirstie kind of have an uneasy truce, but they get along, and you kind of see some interesting interaction with those two as older women who care for this family, but in very different ways. That was fun to look at.
Yeah, I was thinking as I was reading it about how you know, in relation to vocation, that where everybody's called to be holy, no matter what tasks their hands find to do. Or no matter what job they have or what occupation, everybody is equally called to be holy and to save, to do acts of mercy and salvation in the world that they find themselves in.
Yeah.
To be acting on behalf of God in a way, to be the hands and feet.
Mm-hmm.
Of God, in whatever community they're in, wherever you are. So, you know, motherhood is more than just keeping your child physically alive. You know, it's more than keeping food on the table and the laundry done and the toys half picked up. It's a vocation to nurture your child and the world that you and your husband have created. Now, I guess because we had just had a daughter get married, I've been thinking about how they're their own little kingdom now. And, you know, you created a kingdom many years ago, and so did we. And it's been our calling to see that kingdom nurture and to do whatever it takes to keep that kingdom healthy and to sacrifice as mothers and as wives. And that's, you know, that's part of the vocation of being a wife and mother.
Right.
Is the responsibility to keep the kingdom going, flourishing. And I just think that's, you know, that the idea of motherhood and marriage are holy vocations. You know, mm-hmm. Scriptures say that women are saved through the bearing of children. I think it's because it's where we are sanctified. It's where we do our work. It's where we do the actions, the tasks, the cares, and the love that lead our children to their salvation, but it's also how, you know, we are sanctified in ourselves. And in doing these acts of mercy, Kirstie becomes more holy and more sanctified, less selfish. Like, you see her growing.
Yeah. I like this quote. It's on toward the end when they're having the baptism of the new baby, and Kirstie reflects back on her own baptism. And
what page is it?
It's on the bottom of 253. And it was funny. It kind of struck, it was an interesting coincidence that just about the time I was reading this and finishing it up, I had my birthday last week, and my parents were telling stories about when I had been born. And one thing that I'd never heard, the story that I'd never heard before, was that right after I had been born, my dad was there, and he had been working in Pakistan, and my mom and I were going to go join him when I was 3 months old, but he was back in the States for my birth. And right after I was born, they took me in to find a priest so that I could be baptized because my dad was Roman Catholic and my mom's Methodist. So I never knew that. They had taken me on a little journey to go find a priest so that I could be, you know, have the right start in life. And Kirsty is reflecting back on her own baptism. And she says, one way or another, the thing had been accomplished. I had gone forth from that place, not knowing what had been done to me, but clothed with grace, nevertheless, for the life ahead. Strange grace, I thought. But when was grace not strange? So, you know, we live our lives not knowing that the grace of God is with us, and we don't know where it's going to take us, but it does. And like you said, we do those works of mercy and sacrifice in thankfulness.
Yeah, those lines remind me, you know, that Sally Thomas, the author, is a poet. She was a poet first before writing this novel, and, you know, those kinds of ideas. Beautifully said. About grace. Yeah.
Well, I think this book it's got a lot to say about motherhood. It's got a lot to say about vocation, about women's work and our relationship with the world in which we find ourselves. So I think a lot of our homeschool mom listeners would probably find this a book worth reading.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, maybe I should do it in my book club, actually. Right. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to close and wrap us up to talk about bringing full circle. I also heard a quote yesterday. I read it. I'm working my way through Wendell Berry's collection of short stories called That Distant Land. And for those of y'all that have our Dwell coffee cup with the quote on it from Burley Coulter, who's one of Berry's very memorable characters, he's the one who said, all women are brothers. Yeah. And so, in this book, in the short story called The Wild Birds, he and a character named Wheeler Catlett are having a conversation, and they're musing on everything from friendship to brotherhood to where they live in Port William. And here's what Burley Coulter says. He said, the way we are members of each other. All of us, everything. The difference ain't in who is a member and who is not, but in who knows it and who don't. Mm-hmm. So I think Kirsty comes to realize that we are all members of each other, and she comes to know it, you know, over her story.
That's a good one.
Thank you all for listening and for being with us. And we look forward to visiting with you next time. And until then, here's to home.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.